asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking fighting and winning against insane healthcare costs with Marshall Allen.
Yeah, today on the show, we're talking with Marshall Allen. Marshall is a journalist who investigates why we pay so much for healthcare here in America, while at the same time, we get so little in return. He's the author of Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. He is also the founder of Allen Health Academy, which produces a curriculum of short on-demand videos to equip and empower employees to navigate the healthcare system. Marshall, he's been investigating the healthcare industry for 15 years, including over a decade at ProPublica. But we're really excited to dive into the different ways that we can fight and win against insane healthcare costs. Marshall, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
It's an honor to be here with you guys.
Marshall, we're so glad to have you. The first question that we ask everybody who comes on the show, though, Matt and I, we really like craft beer. It's something that we splurge on right now, even while we're trying to save and invest well for the future. What is that in your life? What's the thing that you splurge on while you're trying to be good with your money also?
You know, guys, I hate to say this, but I'm really, really quite boring in this way. And so I even had to run this by my wife. I was like, hon, what is the thing that I splurge on? Because there are things I splurge on, but then I try and do it in like a really frugal way. So like I am a total coffee lover. I love great coffee. But I have found that the best way to do that at an affordable price is to roast my beans myself.
Oh, what? Shut up.
So I order my beans from a website called Sweet Maria's. It's in Oakland. They send you the raw beans. You can roast them up. It takes about 10 minutes to do. And then your beans are totally, totally fresh.
No way.
And stuff you would have paid like $20, $25 a pound for fresh roasted coffee, I can get for like $5 a pound. So so it's a splurge, but I'm doing it in an economical way. Another one
is
like steak.
That's the best way to do it.
I love, Yeah, I love a great steak, but I'm like, man, if I go out for a steak, and this is spending so many years as a journalist, right? So journalism does not pay well. I don't know if anyone ever told you this, right? But the pay is so bad. And I always had a family as long as I was in journalism. So I've got kids and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out a way to make the best steak I can at home. So I love a good steak. And then the other one, this is totally boring, but I'm a writer and books. I mean, I'll buy books just like I love books. I'm actually in the process of moving now, and I have to contemplate getting rid of some of my books.
Oh, no.
And even though I don't read everything that I buy, I really love to buy books. So those would be my three categories.
That sounds like an existential crisis, trying to figure out which books you should part with and which ones you should keep.
My excuse to my wife is always, look, I'm a writer. I don't have to get rid of any of these. It's sort of my justification.
Right.
Nice. Okay. So, Marshall, you shared your secret on how you get really good coffee at an affordable price. You roast your own beans. How do you do that with a nice steak? Is there a secret? Is there a source that you have where you buy the really good ribeyes? How do you make it work?
Well, I don't actually like raise the cows in my backyard, if that's what you mean, and slaughter them myself. I don't go that far. But no, it's really just a matter of getting a good cut of meat. I just go to the grocery store, though. It's nothing dramatic or nothing secret there. Gotcha. And just learning how to make it properly, you know, how to sear it on both sides so that you kind of lock the juices in, how to cook it to the right medium rare consistency, so it's perfect every time. So
nice.
It's just maybe learning how to do it more than getting a special deal.
Technique is so important. And so last little follow-up here, you're talking about coffee. What is your favorite method of brewing? Do you like to do the Chemex? Do you do pour over? Do you do AeroPress?
We could do an hour just on this subject alone, because I feel like every morning for me is the pursuit of the perfect cup of coffee. But my standard go-to method is the Chemex. Like you can get, you know, the French press uses too much coffee. So again, it's just not the most economical way.
I love it.
The Chemex is nice for making it for me and my wife. So I go with the Chemex.
That's exactly the same here. Yeah. All right. Enough about food and Marshall's splurges. Let's get into talking about insurance and healthcare. Marshall, what led you to spend your time and to spend your energy covering the issue of the American healthcare system in the first place?
Well, I started covering healthcare when I went to Las Vegas to become a reporter at the Las Vegas Sun. This was in 2006. And when they hired me just as a general assignment kind of investigative reporter. And I had never covered healthcare before. In fact, I thought the subject sounded totally boring. But they asked me to cover it, and I started writing about it. And I found really quickly that when you write good stories about healthcare, you can get right at two things people care about more than anything else: their health and their money. Mm. Because every healthcare story, you're talking about people's quality of life with regard to their physical health, but more and more, we're talking about their quality of life with regards to their financial health. And so I found that as long as I could lock into one or both of those subjects in the stories I wrote, my stories would get huge traction. So even though, like at ProPublica, for the last few years before the pandemic, I was writing about health insurance. That sounds like the most boring topic in the world. Like if you told people, I'm going to write stories about health insurance, their eyes would totally glaze over. But if you look at all those stories I did in a series I called The Health Insurance Hustle, which I'm showing how we're getting hustled by the health insurance industry. In every single story, I could say, this is why you, reader, pay so much for healthcare. It's because of these games, it's because of this type of deception that's in the industry, that your deductibles are so high you can't afford them, your premiums are so out of control you can't pay for them, and this is why we have right now 1 in 5 Americans with medical debt in collections. I mean, this is a crisis of a situation. And so when I found that I could really angle the stories that way, even though I'm writing about something that seems so boring, I mean, my stories would get picked up, lots of page views, lots of interest. I'd get lots more letters and emails, not letters, I'm not getting letters in the mail, but emails and phone calls from readers, postcards, you know, things coming in over the wire. But you know what I mean? I mean, I got so much feedback from readers that I just continued to dig in and dig in more on that subject.
Yeah. And, you know, the word crisis, I think, gets overused, but I think it's actually appropriate in this scenario when we're talking about the healthcare system. And Marshall, in your book, you actually talk about one of the best experiences that you had in the healthcare system, but there was like this twist, this ironic twist in your story, that that awesome experience wasn't here in the United States. Can you kind of tell us like how that went down?
Yeah, you took away my punchline though by giving away the ending there. But exactly. Well, so here's how it happened. My wife, she unfortunately has gotten migraines her whole life, and so we were traveling. We're actually in Kenya where we used to work there. We did Christian youth work in Kenya for three years. So we went back and took our kids back there in 2019, and this was right before I got the book deal actually to write this book. And unfortunately, my wife had a migraine and it was after hours. And so we couldn't go to a doctor's office or urgent care clinic. So we had to go to the Nairobi Hospital, which is the big hospital there in Nairobi. And, you know, here in the States, if you go into a hospital emergency room, I mean, you're just bracing yourself for like these surprise bills, these out of network bills. You know, they don't give you a price up front. And so they're going to, you don't know what it's going to be when you get it in the mail, you know?
Right.
And here at the Nairobi Hospital, I go in and my wife is there and they say, okay, well, that'll be, you know, I don't remember how much it was, $30 or something for the doctor to see you. And they just printed up an invoice for me and had me pay it right on the spot. And I was like, what is going on here? How is it that they're able to give me a price up front? Whereas in the entire United States, you can't get a price up front. Mm-hmm. Then we go back to the doctor and I'm thinking, okay, here's where they're going to overtreat us. You know, they're going to say they need to do a scan of her brain to make sure there's not an aneurysm. The guy was like, hey, it looks like she just needs some pain medication. And my wife and I are like, yeah, that's exactly right. So he's like, you can get it on the pharmacy from the pharmacy on your way out. And I'm like, okay, here's where they're going to get us because drug costs are marked up. You know, you don't know how much it's going to be. There's all these secret spread pricing and rebating and American drug prices. Well, here they just were like, pay us $30 and get your drugs. And I paid them $30 and I left the hospital and my wife got what she needed. And it was the most remarkable experience because we actually engaged with an emergency room in a hospital without feeling like we were being financially exploited because of our desperation. And unfortunately in the United States, what happens over and over again is that the system knows that we need care and we can't control when we get the care that we need. So unlike other financial purchases, like if you buy a TV or go on a vacation or buy a new car, those are like things we can control. We can shop around. We can decide not to buy the thing. We can buy a cheaper version of it. But with healthcare, when you're sick, you know, if you're a diabetic and you need insulin, you need that to save your life.
Right.
And unfortunately, diabetes and insulin is a tragic example. The Senate Finance Committee just put out a report last year that showed the drug makers and the pharmacy benefit managers, these are the insurance companies that manage pharmacy costs, they have been jacking up the price of insulin year after year after year without showing any improvement in the drug itself. And so unfortunately, people who are diabetics are just required to pay hundreds of dollars a month for something 10 years ago would have cost a fraction of that cost. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a system where the business side of the industry has identified that people need care and they will pay any price because it's about saving their life or saving the life of their kid or their loved one. And so they take advantage of that and they're exploiting us. And there's a lot of deception in the industry. There's lots of financial pitfalls. And so the book really breaks down how to identify these pitfalls, what they are, and then how to navigate around them. And then if you get hit with a bogus bill where it's overpriced or it's inaccurate, I show in the book step by step how to identify those errors and overcharges in your bills and then how to contest them and how to fight back.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, we're really excited to dive into some of those practical steps when it comes to making sure that we're not just completely getting hosed over by hospitals and different practices. But
yeah,
this just goes to show that as great of a country the U.S. is, we definitely have some broken industries in our lives. And when it comes to insurance, Marshall, you know, most of us are used to shopping around for the best price on things, but there are multiple important factors when it comes to shopping for health coverage. And so how can individuals and how can families know that they are choosing the right insurance plan for them?
Well, so that's a tough question to answer because everybody is in such a different position when it comes to the type of coverage that they actually need for their family. It depends a lot on their financial situation, and it depends a lot on how many times they feel like they need to go to the doctor or to the hospital, if they have chronic conditions or not, or if they're pretty healthy. many times for most people, working Americans, you're in an employer-sponsored health plan. So you're also limited that way. Your employer will present a set of options to you, and then you have to choose from those options. That covers about 155 million Americans are in that category. Then you have maybe 5% of all working Americans are in like the exchange plan type of insurance plans. Those are the individual healthcare plans that came through the Affordable Care Act, which often people call that Obamacare. So these are the Obamacare plans. Those can be really expensive. And subsidies are available for a lot of people, depending on their income. But if you're priced out, if you make just too much to get those subsidies, then those are extremely expensive types of health plans to get. And I've even seen a lot of people now using some of the sharing plans, you know, like there's Christian healthcare sharing ministries, and then there's others that are not faith-based at all. And these are plans that are not insurance, but they are basically people coming together and agreeing to pay each other's medical bills. And they always have different types of rules and restrictions, and you have to be very careful to check the references of any of these plans to make sure they're actually paying the bills like they say they are. Mm-hmm. But I actually know some people who do these plans, and they've been very happy with them. And if you're relatively healthy and don't feel like an obvious need for ongoing care, those plans might be a good option.
Yeah, it seems like there have been more incentives recently when it comes to getting healthcare on the exchange. Like, so many people qualify for a much lower rate when it comes to getting healthcare that way. But yeah, I'm with you. Some of those health sharing plans for people that don't qualify for those lower rates on the exchange, they've almost become like the only place they can turn, it seems like. And what do people need to consider and look into before they sign up for one of those health sharing companies? Because if the premiums are $300 a month versus $2,200 a month, I mean, that's a huge difference, and most people can't afford some of those policies that you would buy on the exchange.
Right. The other issue with the exchange plans is that you're often going to have a pretty sizable deductible there.
Right.
And that deductible is the amount of money you have to pay before the health plan kicks in and pays anything. So there are a lot of people on these high deductible health plans right now, and they are paying the first dollar of almost every single thing that they get care for. So you're paying your premium every month, and then you expect your health plan to cover something for you, but you have to pay that deductible. And sometimes that deductible is $3,000, $5,000, even $10,000. And so effectively, you're uninsured until you've paid out of pocket that amount. But with investigating the health sharing plans, I would get references. So I would talk to people who are actually on the plans and ask them how well it's worked for them. I would look up the reviews on Google, on Yelp. I would look up the Better Business Bureau reviews for each of those plans. And you can find out pretty quickly if things are scammy, because it does show up pretty fast on online reviews. So I would check all those things. If you just want to start exploring as a journalist, I would often put in the name of a company or an individual in quotes on Google, and then I would just put PDF after it. And if you like to look for a PDF file with that name in it, and it's amazing how many times that will pull up some type of a disciplinary action or some type of a regulator action, some type of public document often gets pulled up that way. So that's kind of another little trick when searching
trick
to see if these folks have been disciplined. Yeah, you just got to nose around a little bit and see what you find.
Very cool. Yeah, our family, Marshall, we've actually been with MediShare, which is one of those sharing plans. And in our case, we definitely do have a very high deductible. It's technically called our annual household portion, I think is what it's called. But it is $10,000. But in exchange for that, our monthly premiums, essentially the equivalent of what they call a premium, it's only $250. And so we're experiencing dramatic savings month to month. And because of that, we have taken that into account. And our emergency fund is quite large to make sure that we are able to cover that cost were it to arrive. And I guess if you're looking at some of these expensive plans on the exchange without any subsidies, and if you're paying a whole lot month to month, but you're also being forced to pay a very high deductible, you're kind of getting shortchanged on both ends. And like you said, it kind of comes down to how you use the plan, right?
Yeah, and another thing you can do is combine what you're doing there with a direct primary care relationship. Mm-hmm. We're seeing more and more doctors now move to direct primary care, which means you pay a monthly cost for unlimited care often from that doctor. And so this is for your primary care. You know, this is so that your family still gets your annual checkups, you get any vaccinations or anything that you need, any type of like standard healthcare that your family needs is going to be really well taken care of. And you could probably get that for around $100 to $200 a month.
Yeah, those are definitely becoming more popular and for good reason. All right, we've got more questions we want to get to with you, Marshall, including how to shop around for a specific procedure in advance of that procedure being done. And then also, too, like once a bill comes your way, how do you fight it in order to save money? We'll get to the nuts and bolts of that stuff right after this break.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch, they make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All All right, we are back from the break. We're talking with Marshall Allen about healthcare costs. And Marshall, you know, even though we're seeing near-term healthcare costs on the rise, you say that there are ways that we can spend less of our hard-earned money on healthcare. What are some of the biggest levers that we can pull in order to reduce that cost?
That's a great question. I mean, the main thesis of my book is that for year after year now, for decades, we have been paying more and more for our healthcare and getting less for our money. But if you look at the data about how overpriced and wasteful our healthcare system is, we should be paying a lot less money and getting a lot more for our money. So that's really the argument in my book. There is no justification for these high healthcare costs. And once you know that, then that empowers you to give you the conviction you need to push back. So I think the number one easiest way to save money on healthcare is make sure that you are not getting care that you don't need. It's unbelievable how much care is actually deemed unnecessary in our healthcare system. It's maybe 25% of all the care that's provided is found to be unnecessary. And so the trick, of course, is, well, how do you know what's necessary and what's not, right? You don't want to avoid getting the care that you need. And so one way to think this through is recognize the incentives that the healthcare system is operating under. If your doctor or your surgeon or your hospital only gets paid when they perform an operation or they provide some type of treatment, then their incentive is going to be to do more, because that's how they get paid. And that's just something that all of us as human beings are susceptible to, the incentives that drive us, right? Mm-hmm. And so when
carrots.
Your doctor is recommending something that's discretionary, let's say it's a test or a treatment or a procedure or a drug, and you're not sure, you know, you're just trying to figure out what's going on maybe. It's not an obvious case where something should be done. Ask the doctor this question. Ask the doctor, what happens if we wait? What happens if we don't do this right now? In fact, I have this happen. It comes up almost every time I go to my dentist. My dentist is always trying to get me to do x-rays. And I'm sure your dentist is always trying to get you to do x-rays too, right?
They're always pushing it, yeah.
Well, how much have my teeth really shifted in the last year or 2 years or 6 months? And so ask the question, what happens if we wait? What happens if we don't do these x-rays right now? Are my teeth going to fall out of my mouth? Is there going to be a dramatic shift in my mouth that 6 months from now, you won't be able to give me the cleaning of my teeth? What exactly is going on here? And often what you find is they don't have a really good answer for that question. So ask that question, what happens if we wait? And what that does is it reframes the conversation. So instead of assuming that we're going to do something, you start exploring the option of not doing it and finding out, okay, am I going to drop dead if I walk out of here right now without doing this thing you're telling me? Another thing you can check to avoid unnecessary care is look at the recommendations of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. So any listener can Google that, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. And the task force is a group of volunteer experts, all doctors, who are funded by the federal government to do research and read the latest research on things like preventive screening tests. So let's say for a woman, it might be a mammogram. For a guy, it might be a prostate exam. These are things where they always want to do these screenings to say, well, we want to make sure that you don't have breast cancer, right? Which sounds important. And if your doctor's telling you to do that, you definitely want to take their advice, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, the studies show that women, it's not recommended to get a breast examination, mammogram, if they don't have a history of breast cancer until they're 50 years old. And yet doctors will tell women starting certainly in their 40s, because that's been my wife's experience, that they should be getting that every year or every 2 years. And if you look at those recommendations, they actually do not say that's a recommendation based on the best scientific evidence. Mm. Because what happens is they have a lot of false negatives on those tests. Mm. And it's extremely rare for younger women with no history of breast cancer to get it. You can also identify it with just the manual examinations. You don't have to do the scans. And so that helps you avoid treatment you don't need. It helps you avoid overtreatment. And they have these kinds of guidelines for all different types of screening tests. So check out the task force.
That's great. I like that. And I think I like what you're saying. There's a certain amount of
pushback that we need to give to, I think we just instinctively trust somebody like a doctor or a dentist, somebody in a white lab coat, man or woman, whoever's providing the service. And we just assume that whatever they tell us is the next step we need to take. But I love that. We should just push back with a simple question that makes it easy for us to then make sure that whatever step we're taking next is in our best interest. I want to know too, Marshall, the healthcare industry, it makes it so difficult for us to become an informed consumer, even with the recent price transparency order from the federal government. It's hard to know what the price should be for any sort of service that we're looking to get. So when we go see a doctor, how do we know if we're being charged a fair price in the first place before we actually sign up for that procedure that we feel like it's necessary?
So most of the healthcare that we get is discretionary. And by that, I mean you have time to actually decide where you're going to go for that care. So another really key principle to keep in mind is always realize that there's huge price variation in healthcare. And so you might have, let's say you have to get a CT scan or an X-ray or an MRI. If your doctor or nurse practitioner or whoever that clinician is routes you, let's say they work for a big hospital chain in your town. And so they're going to route you and refer you to an imaging center affiliated with your hospital. Well, research has shown, and people in the industry know, that anytime you go to a hospital for a lab test or an MRI or any type of a scan, the prices are going to be way higher, and I mean exponentially higher, than if you go to an independent imaging center or an independent lab. And so if you just need some type of lab test or scan, identify an independent imaging center and call and get the prices there. And you can also check out a company called greenimaging.net. Greenimaging.net, look them up online. They do scans and they do direct pay contracts with imaging centers. And so you can get a scan. I talked to one guy, he needed two MRIs before he got back surgery. He was told that it would cost $9,000 if he did it through the hospital MRI center.
Wow.
He went to Green Imaging and he got both of those scans for about $900.
Oh my
gosh. So just like in the blink of an eye,
holy cow,
he saved more than $8,000, and he was on a high deductible plan. He had a $10,000 deductible. So for him, he saved $8,000 just by avoiding the hospital MRI center. And so that's not something you would ever expect, right? It's the same MRI. So why would it cost so much more if you go to one location than another? And this is also why you don't ever want to go to an emergency room if you just have the sniffles. Go to your primary care doctor or go to an urgent care center. But if you go to that hospital emergency room, they are going to bill you much, much more money for the exact same service you could get somewhere else at a lower price.
Yeah, just like with music, it pays to find out the independent bands, find those indie labs, find those indie imaging centers, because you can save a lot of money. Catch them before they're big, you know? Like I knew them way back when.
That's
they were
right.
only charging $900. So Marshall, your book, it's called Never Pay the First Bill. Got it. We know that should be kind of the action that we take there. But can you explain why it is that we actually shouldn't pay the first bill? We've talked about how to get that discount ahead of time. But after we receive the bill, why shouldn't we pay that first bill?
Well, when I say never pay the first bill, I mean, I'm obviously not saying never pay your bills. But what I mean is the principle is never pay the first bill until you have checked to make sure that it's accurate and that it's priced fairly. So when you get that medical bill in the mail, the first thing you need to do is make sure your insurance plan, if you have insurance, has processed it correctly. So your insurance plan gives you what's called the explanation of benefits, also known as an EOB. And that has a breakdown of how much the billed charges were, how much the agreed upon amount was that the insurance plan has agreed to pay. And that should be some kind of a discount off of the billed charges. Again, this is just the crazy convoluted way we pay for healthcare in this country. The price is not the price. They give this really high billed charge amount, and then the insurance company is supposed to give you a discount off of that. So anyway, you look at the billed charges, you look at the price that the insurance company negotiated for you to pay. You have a deductible that's going to be factored in there maybe. You might have coinsurance. That's the amount that the portion that you have to pay versus the portion that your insurance plan pays. And then you have the amount you owe. The other last year, maybe it was a little more than a year ago, I got a bill in the mail for $250 from an urgent care center where my son had gone. And they said on that bill that my insurance plan had paid nothing. And I had not received any explanation of benefits from my insurance plan. So I knew something was off right there. So I call my insurance company and they said that the bill had not even been sent to them. So right there, just by checking that bill, I was able to see, oh, this didn't get processed by my insurance plan. And so they need to send it to the insurance company, not to me. So they sent the bill to the insurance company right like that. In 5 minutes, I saved $250. If I wasn't paying attention, that would have been something easily that myself or my wife could have paid.
Yeah.
And so I think people also don't realize just how screwed up this billing system is. You think that because it's a doctor, you know, he has his MD, you have nurses who are highly trained, you have physical therapists, they're in fancy hospitals with really expensive equipment. So they give you this aura of competence, right? And they better because we're putting our lives in their hands, right?
Right, right.
But on the billing side, I mean, it is a complete mess. Some of these hospitals and insurance companies, they're using IT systems from like the 80s and 90s. I mean, they have not updated the programming on these things. And so instead, they've done a bunch of patches on top of patches on top of patches. They're auto-paying bills millions a day. This is like a giant assembly line with no quality control mechanism in place. And so if you know that, then you know, okay, there's a good chance that there's an error on my bill. Also, a lot of times, so look at the insurance company EOB, then get an itemized medical bill. So hospitals will usually just give you a bill that says, pay this amount. They don't even tell you, they don't give you a breakdown on it. Like if you went to the grocery store and they just said, pay this amount without telling you the prices.
No receipt.
No receipt, right? It's like having no receipt. You're like, well, come on, guys. Like, what did you bill me for? What did you do? Well, when you look at those itemized bills, and it is your right to have it. It is absolutely your right to have that. When you get that itemized bill, you can check and see, okay, did they do this? Did they do this? Did they do this? Oftentimes, you'll find things on there that they did not even do. In fact, I just got an email from a reader who said he went to his dentist. Again, not to pick on dentists, but this is like the dentist episode, right? But he said he went to his dentist and when he saw the breakdown in the charges, there was a $175 charge on there and he couldn't figure out what it was. He called the dentist and their billing department and they couldn't figure out what it was for either.
Wow.
So they took it off. And he was, again, he's like in 5 minutes, he saved $175 just by having them remove that.
Sometimes that gentle pushback does work, right? Or, you know, just recognizing, actually, my insurance company didn't get the bill and I need to make sure that they get it and, you know, that they pay the portion that they need to pay before I even consider paying. But then, you know, what happens if you get an outrageous bill and you're like, okay, the pushback isn't working? You even mentioned taking a more drastic measure, like taking people to court, right? Another step we should consider too?
Oh, I think this is the game-changing tactic right here, guys. So anybody who loves America, and I do love America, and I know our country has problems, but I do love this country. There are certain privileges we have in this country that other people just do not enjoy. And small claims court is one of these privileges because our small claims court system is set up so that a powerless, weak individual can sue using the power of our judicial system and require a powerful company or individual to answer for the way they are treating that weaker, less powerful individual. And so when you get a bill, so let's say you analyze it and you can see that it's in error or you can see it's overpriced. So I also show in the book how to check prices. And there's a website called fairhealthconsumer.org. Look up Fair Health Consumer and compare it to your itemized medical bill. And especially you need to get the billing codes. I show how to do that in the book. You can look up and you can see, is the price that they charge me fair or not? Now also on hospital websites, they're required to post their prices. And often what you see is that the cash price might even be a lot less than the price that your insurance company negotiated for you. So this has been standard in the industry, right? Hospitals and insurance companies set prices, and then they tell us to pay them, whether they're fair prices or not. Even if the cash price is less, they'll just tell you, oh no, that's our negotiated rate, so you have to pay it. And my argument is this, look, why should any one patient pay more than any other patient for the exact same service at the exact same hospital?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And so just because they say this is how it's always been, I'm sorry, I don't care what kind of nonsense you all are, what kind of world you're living in. I don't have to agree to that. Yeah. I'm involved here too. And not only that, you're making me pay for this. So small claims court, if you identify a bill that's in error or overpriced, you can file a case for like $20 or $30 or $40 in most states. You have gathered all the information you need. You have the evidence you need because in my book, I show how to get an itemized bill, how to price it, how to get your medical records and make sure they document the care you received. It's easy to do this stuff. It does take some steps. It takes some knowledge and learning. It takes some initiative. But if they will not correct it, when you sue them, what you do is you create a very expensive hassle for them because now the hospital has to hire their own attorney for hundreds of dollars an hour to defend themselves against a case. I mean, many of these cases are only worth a few hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars. And the limits in a lot of states are actually quite high. Like in the state of Texas, you can sue in small claims court for anything under $20,000.
Wow.
In New Jersey, where I am, there's a branch of circuit court here called the Special Civil Branch, where you don't have to have an attorney to sue someone. It's just like small claims, and you can sue for up to $15,000. So the limits are quite big. Some states it's small, like $3,000, but still it's enough that it covers a lot of these bills. And so we are protected. So then think about it. They now have to hire an attorney to defend themselves. It's going to cost them a lot of money. You are giving them the incentive that they need to come to the table and give you a fair price. Instead of price gouging you, give me the price that's fair. I'm happy to pay a fair price, but what I don't want to do is just let you rip me off. And that's what I'm trying to encourage people to do.
Let's say the hospital reaches back out, but like before you get to the lawsuit territory, right? You have not sued them yet because you're not at that point. And the hospital's like, listen, we love you. We're going to put you on a payment plan. Like, what should you say when that happens?
Oh, that's always their solution. That's always their solution is to put you on a payment plan. Sending people into debt is not the answer for a dysfunctional and ridiculously overpriced healthcare system. And that's been their go-to method. Oh, well, we'll just put you on a payment plan. I talked to a woman the other day. In fact, this was at a conference where I was speaking. This woman raises her hand. She tells this, I've never heard anything like this. She had a colonoscopy where they billed her $15,000 for the colonoscopy.
Oh my gosh.
$15,000. You talk about taking it up the rear. This poor woman.
Plated colonoscopy.
This poor woman was getting screwed in more ways than one. Yeah. So the woman, of course, did not have the $15K to pay for the colonoscopy. Now, just for a little balance here, you should easily be able to get a colonoscopy for $1,000 to $3,000. So that $15,000 is completely outrageous. So they said, oh, we'll put you on a payment plan. She couldn't afford most of the payment plans. So they put her on a payment plan that lasted for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
10 years that this poor woman has had to pay this bill for this colonoscopy that was outrageously priced. And so that's a case where if she would have sued them in small claims court, she would have said, look, I'm not, there's, this is an overpriced bill. Imagine them justifying that in front of a judge.
Right.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough one to justify because it's totally outside the standard of what people are paying. And there's actually, in my book, I talk about the open price term. This is a part of our law. It's part of our Uniform Commercial Code, which is the law that governs consumer transactions in the United States. And the open price term says, if you don't get a price up front, then it's assumed that it will be a price that is reasonable and that's set in good faith. And so the healthcare system does not have the right under our laws in this country to charge us whatever they want. It's what they've been doing and they've been getting away with it, but they don't actually have the right to do that. And so, you know, when you make your case in small claims court, you actually have a strong legal standing to make this case. And so people just need to do it. It does take courage and it does take initiative, but I encourage people, you can reach out to me. You can look me up on my website, marshallallen.com. send me a message. I am happy to show you how this process works. And I lay it out in the book, but I'm also happy to coach people through it. Because every time I help someone through the process, first of all, it's just delightful for me. I've made this my hobby. It's really fun for me. But also I get great case studies, right, that I can share with other people. Yeah. And so it is really, really fun to see people pushing back, standing up for themselves. It's very empowering. And then you see that the bullies back off because they don't want to spend that amount of money to defend these cases. You're making it not in their interest financially to take you on. And again, it's not so you can avoid paying. It's just so that you don't get ripped off.
It's just so that you can pay a fair price. And
right.
And specifically, we want to get to some of those wins here in a little bit after the break. But Marshall, does it ever make sense as you're negotiating and as you're trying to figure out what is going on with your bill, does it ever actually make sense to mention the fact that, hey, well, I understand that I've got a pretty good case here. Does it make sense to mention small claims court when you're negotiating with the billing department?
Definitely it does.
Okay.
And I don't know that it's going to work. You know, it might not. The other thing that you should do is before you sue, and I have a template for it in the book, send a warning letter. So one thing that courts don't want, they don't want us wasting their time.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want us taking a thing to mess with our taxpayer-funded court system if it's avoidable. And so you're going to send them a 30-day notice before you sue them, or 2-week notice or 1-week notice, whatever you want. But you want to be able to show that judge, I did everything I could to settle this in a fair way without wasting your time, judge, and the hospital refused to give me a fair deal. And so that warning letter does tell them, hey, if you don't correct this within a week or within 2 weeks or 30 days, I'm going to sue you in small claims court. So you gotcha. Definitely want to notify them and tell them that you're going to do that. And I think it is effective.
What about listeners, Marshall, who have got their debt has their medical debt has been sold to a collection agency. And you actually say that that might put us in a stronger negotiating position once the debt is out of the hospital's hand and in the hands of an agency, right? Like, how do we then make sure that we're not that we're getting a deal when it comes to paying off a debt that's been sold elsewhere?
Well, you're hitting on something that to me is maybe the greatest shame of our healthcare system. We spend twice as much per person on healthcare than any other citizens of any other developed country or any other average spending in a developed country. And yet we have 1 in 5 Americans, tens of millions of Americans have medical debt in collections.
Yeah.
And so I included a chapter on that because we need to not stigmatize it. If it hasn't happened to you, it's happened to someone you know. It hasn't happened because somebody was irresponsible or did something they shouldn't have done. In fact, it's probably happened because of an error-filled or overpriced healthcare bill mm-hmm. that the person didn't even know they could push back against. And so they ended up in collections. So, but in a dark way, like you mentioned, your leverage gets better. And that's because they've given up on you, basically. they think you're not going to give them anything. And so that's the starting point. You know, so when that collection agent calls you, do not ignore the call, first of all. Contest that medical debt in writing within 30 days. Make them justify it. Again, I have a template in the book of a letter that you can send to them by certified mail. So that you need to make them justify it, because often their whole debt collection system, they buy and sell so much debt so many times that, I mean, they swap it like, you know, you used to trade baseball cards when you were a kid, you know? And so they can't even keep track of who actually has the legal grounds to collect the debt. So make them justify it. But let's say they do justify it, and now you need to negotiate a payment. They're going to start, like, let's say you owe $1,000. They're going to start at 1,000. You need to start at 0 because already you know if it's coming to collections, they think they're not going to get anything. So start with 0 and say, I'm so sorry, I can't afford to pay you anything. So I know you'd really like to get the 1,000 from me, but that's not going to work. I mean, my family has all these bills. Build a relationship with them. Help them to understand where you're coming from. Tell them you'd like to pay it. Yeah, paint a picture for them. Build a relationship. It does not do any good to cuss these people out, even though you might want to. And I talked to experts who said that when they buy debt, they buy it for pennies on the dollar. So let's say it's $1,000. They might have bought your debt for, at the most, say, $50. And so if you can get them to take something over $50 so that they make a profit, but a massive discount for you, then you can pay that off at a huge discount. So the number that I came to with one of the experts I talked to was get it down to about an 85% discount. Hmm. So in other words, if you owed $1,000, you know they probably bought it for $50 at the most. See if you can get them down to $150. Pay it off in a lump sum. Get that thing gone if you can, or get on a payment plan for that reduced rate. But be warned there, because you don't ever want to get on a payment plan that you default on, because if you default on it, then that debt is going to go right back to that original $1,000 number that you owed without any discount.
Right. So once you strike a deal, make sure you stick with the terms of that deal. All right, Marshall, we're going to take a quick break. But after that break, we're going to talk about you've given some great examples already of some wins, basically, some examples of folks who have been able to drastically reduce the cost of their medical bills. But we want to hear some more of those. We'll get to that, plus a couple other questions right after this break.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch, they make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, we're back from the break. We're still talking with Marshall Allen about fighting and winning when it comes to insane healthcare costs. A ton of good information already on this episode. Marshall, you have this place on your website, though, where people can share victory stories. I love that because I think like we need to hold these people up as heroes who are fighting back against this insane healthcare system. But what are a couple of the best ones you've received?
Well, I mean, this has been the most fun part of the book for me. Like, I really loved writing the book. It's been fun to launch the book. It's been successful. It's selling well. So that's really fun. But the most satisfying part to me is these victory stories. And so, again, I encourage anybody to go to my website, and I have a form on there that you can fill out. If you've had one of these wins, please share it with me because I'm writing these up. I'm doing interviews with people who have victories because what I want to do is kind of get rid of the idea that we can't do anything about this. The subtitle of my book, the book is Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. The and winning is the most important part.
Yep.
So let me just read this. I know this woman and I helped this woman myself, but I love this Amazon review. It's a woman named Alexia Kalal is her name. She says on her Amazon review, "This book saved my family $70,000 in medical bills.
Wow.
This book and the author are the real deal. My family was near financial ruin when we found out our insurance denied my procedure and the hospital tried to stick us with a $78,000 bill. We were told by both the hospital and our insurance that we didn't qualify for any assistance. Thanks to Marshall and the information in his book, we were able to push back against the hospital and insurance company in an informed way that made them realize they had to do something to fix this. Hmm. We ultimately came out owing nothing. Without this information, we wouldn't have even known where to begin, and we would have gone down the path of filing bankruptcy. If you were dealing with bills, large or small, the information in this book is truly life-changing." And she has a picture of her bill from the hospital. It says total charges $78,612, balance due on the account zero.
Man, I'm about to cry over here just hearing you read that. When you first read that, you must have been like teary-eyed, right? Like, I mean, that's beautiful.
Well, I was. She called me actually. So this Alexia is a really wonderful young woman. She and her husband Derek have two kids. They live in South Dakota. And she was told by the hospital that her insurance company had approved this treatment. Well, what happened is they actually sent her the wrong message because what they said, the insurance company had told them, well, it doesn't have to be approved because it's an outpatient procedure, not an inpatient procedure. So she got the wrong information, but she listened to what everyone told her. She got the procedure. The procedure actually worked. It took care of the problem that she was having, but then she gets a bill in the mail because they said it was unapproved because it was experimental. So I have a chapter in my book about how to fight these insurance company denials. And so I walk people through the mindset, the approach, the evidence-based argument you need to make, and also how to get your employer involved. And in this case, she was in her husband's employer-sponsored health plan, and they were able to get the employer to put some pressure on the insurance company to take care of this bill, which they should have done in the first place. Insurance companies will call anything experimental. And so sometimes things are experimental, but not everything's experimental. And so I really love that example because she had the courage to do it. Her back was against the wall, so she had to do it, but she came out on top. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge, huge encouragement and a huge win.
Yeah, well, one of the things that stood out to me is that she said that she was informed, and that is what you're doing through your book. You even said yourself, to be able to make these evidence-based arguments, like, that is what we need to do when it comes to making sure that we are being treated properly.
You can't just be like, it's too big, I hate it, don't make it go away. Exactly, like, you have to have an informed argument.
What I like to show people, because, again, how do you get people engaged in the topic of health insurance, right? Or how do you get people motivated to get engaged and activated with looking at their medical bills? And the way I'm trying to do it, quite crassly, is to say you could save hundreds or even thousands of dollars if you engage with this, if you boost your financial literacy in this healthcare way, right? I mean, sometimes you think about the first time when you were a young person, maybe a teenager, and you got your first checking account, and you got those first bank statements, and you had to even balance a checkbook, and you're like, how does this work anyway? I'm very confused by all these numbers. But you knew that you had to learn how to balance a checkbook and look at your bank statements or your credit card statements, because if you didn't, you could lose hundreds or even thousands of dollars. Well, the numbers are even higher in the healthcare system. If we don't engage on this, we could lose hundreds or thousands of dollars per healthcare interaction. I think, again, people just don't realize how overpriced the healthcare system is and how unjustified the prices are and how they want you to stay in the dark so that they can keep making you pay more. It's completely unfair. And it gets me fired up. So I'm sure you can tell that that I don't like this. I do not like this at all, you know?
And sometimes
it's ruining people's lives.
It feels like there's a gun to our head, but you're teaching us the jujitsu to to figure out how to quickly take that gun away and then knock it out of that aggressor's hands so that we are on a level playing field. Yep. And there's just so many great tips in the book, and we got to talk about so much of it today on the show. So yeah, Marshall, I love the book so much, and we will make sure that our audience checks it out because it's going to save them money in the long haul. Where can our audience find out more about the book, more about you and what you're up to?
Well, so I already mentioned my website, marshallallen.com. Another thing I really want to tell people about and encourage people to support, I have just launched a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo, and that's to create a series of health literacy videos that are based on the book. And so I take all these principles that are in the book. I know most people aren't going to read a book, they're not going to take the time to get it and read it. But if you can get this content, it's like 15 short 3 to 5 minute videos. I'm raising money for the production of the videos, the animation and the graphics costs. And so people can go to Indiegogo and look up the Never Pay Pathway. That's what I'm calling it. Or you can look up my name. So you can support that and share that if you're interested. I'm trying to get the power of the crowd to help fund the production costs. And then share victory stories with me. That's another thing I'm so excited about. I'm seeing people achieve these individual wins. And it's tremendously empowering. And I know that your listeners know, many people are not in a position where they can stand up for themselves. Maybe they're too sick. They're trying to fight their cancer or something. They're trying to care for loved ones. Maybe they're working a lot of jobs and they just don't have time. And so I think not everybody's going to be able to do this, but those of us who can, you're not just fighting for yourself, you're going to have your own win, but you're also standing up for all those other people who can't stand up for themselves against a system that has just become entitled to take our money without any justification. And so I think when we rise up together and push back, we are going to have a tremendous amount of leverage to bring about change in our healthcare system. And that's going to help us a lot in the long run.
I love it. That's so good, Marshall. Thank you for meeting us here at the intersection of money and healthcare. You are the right man to talk to about that, and we appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's a huge honor for me. Keep it up, guys.
All right, Matt. I got to say, that was a great conversation, and Marshall has been doing the hard work for a long time now to know, first, the problems that are in our healthcare system, and then how we as individuals can fight back against it. Tons of great info in the book, and then just a lot of great information in this conversation that I think can help our listeners actually fight back against unfair bills that they might receive from a hospital, and then even just how to proactively shop around and get the lowest price on a procedure that you need. But yeah, what was your big takeaway from this combo?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things he mentioned early on in the interview, he talked about direct primary care doctors. And so basically, these are essentially plans that you work out, and a lot of times individual doctors will have them. I mean, the way I understand it, it's a lot like a subscription service.
Exactly.
Like you pay month to month, you have direct access to this doctor, and you get everything you need to taken care of. That's not something I have ever had. But as our family grows, as we kind of continue to have different issues that we might want to have looked at, like I feel like I could see that becoming something that would make sense for us. He recommended it. It's not something we've talked a lot about on the show, but we are seeing the rise in these relationships. And especially as more families and individuals move to these high deductible plans to take care of them if disaster or tragedy were to strike, right? Like if there's cancer or something like that, you're going to hit that deductible and you might end up paying, you know, $5,000, $7,000, $8,000 out of pocket to hit that higher deductible. But when it comes to some of the kind of day-to-day doctor stuff, these direct primary care plans might be the path for folks to take.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to see those continue to proliferate, and it kind of cuts out the middleman, right? Now it's just you and your doctor as opposed to some insurance company standing in the middle, and you get kind of unfettered access to your doctor under some of those plans.
Yeah, I like They're how there's cool. It feels like there's more of a relationship. It feels like more like an old school doctor setup.
Exactly.
You know, where you might show up to your house with like a leather satchel.
Right, right.
I think you might have to pay bonus. Like, you have to pay extra for that.
If you come on horseback, how much is that going to cost me? But
Little House on the Prairie style. Right. That's what I'm looking for. Can you provide that for me?
Exactly. That would be nice. And then you're just like, can we barter? I'll trade you 3 chickens if you'll take a look at this rash.
How about some steaks? Marshall would be down for that.
Yes,
but yeah, what about you, man? What was your big takeaway?
I think ultimately my big takeaway was it takes tenacity. You have to arm yourself with the knowledge. And then you just have to kind of get that bulldog face, and you kind of got to go about the process of attacking these healthcare bills. If you take it lying down, you're going to pay high prices.
Exactly.
And if you fight back, you're going to see major price breaks. You're going to see some of these bills completely forgiven, but you have to be proactive and you have to be willing to fight. And you know, that's in the title of the book, right? Fight and win. And if you fight, you're going to win more often than not. But you got to be willing to throw the first punch.
Totally. You got to have that right mindset. And that's also what's going to allow you to take the courageous steps to potentially sue them in small claims court, right?
Yeah.
It takes that entire shift in mindset. And I just appreciate the perspective that he was able to bring today during this interview. Man, let's shift gears and get to our beer. Today, you and I each enjoyed Fade Away, which is a red corn lager by Cruz Blanc. What were your thoughts on this beer?
So I'm digging this brewery. I like what they're putting out. This was like a traditional lager, but with a twist, with the corn, with the red corn in there.
Yeah.
So it has
it gave it a lot of different flavors.
It really did.
From a traditional lager, I think.
I agree. It had like a lot more stuff happening. And I think the biggest thing, it had a nice little like yeasty sort of funk going on to it, which I really appreciate.
Almost like a Saison. I wrote that in my notes. It almost tasted like an Oktoberfest Saison. It had some of these additional flavors that you wouldn't normally get out of a lager. Like, it almost made it even taste like it was barrel-aged or wood-aged or something like that. But also with it, it had this caramel and malty flavor profile going on. I really enjoyed it. This was another one that was donated to the show by Dennis, as well as our friends up there at Cruz Blanca. Definitely have enjoyed their beers. They're out of Chicago.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want the show notes, including links to what Marshall's up to, including a link to his book, which we highly recommend, you can find those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, man. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.